Okay, we talked about the acute lymphoblastic leukemias yesterday, which hits the younger age group, especially children. Today we're going to talk about some chronic lymphocytic leukemias. They have a tendency to hit the older population, okay? So, chronic lymphocytic leukemia is the most common leukemia in the Western world.
We need to pray.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Prayer. Jump.
I'll
say it, okay. Thank you.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this wonderful day and for the opportunity to be at this great university and to be taught by great people. And we're grateful that we're in this program and that we have the opportunity to learn things that will help save people's lives. And we pray that that would help us to learn and retain all the things that we will see today. And please help us to study hard this afternoon. And we love thee very much and are grateful for all that was done for us. And these things we pray in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much for the reminder, especially. Okay. So, anyway, yes.
Are these normal?
They're normal looking. They're just small looking mature lymphocytes. Okay?
And did you say it's the most common leukemia in what?
In the Western world. So, here, the United States. Okay. Okay, so you will see this many times in your life. Okay? If you stay in clinical laboratory science. Okay, it's a progressive accumulation of morphologically mature appearing lymphocytes. You know, in the spleen, in the lymph nodes, you have an architecture of lymphocytes there. And in essence, that architecture is kind of messed up, okay? You don't have the germinal centers and everything just exactly like. It will basically obliterate the reticular networks. So it's just kind of a wipeout of lymphocytes in your bone marrow. It's a wipeout of lymphocytes in your lymph nodes. They have abnormal immunologic capacities, meaning you get more infections, okay? They don't do a great job at surveillance, so you can get secondary malignancies associated with the fact that you don't have a great immunological system. 50% have hypogammaglobulinemia. Christine, did you leave the water down here by any chance? Anyway, okay, so because you can't mature past the point of these chronic lymphocytic leukemic cells, so they don't go on to produce plasma cells, which gives you your gamma globulin or your immunoglobulin. So thank you, Christine. So anyway, you can see that they're immuno-incompetent, okay? Okay, this is important. 95% of these cells are B cells. So you have the B cell markers there, except for one marker, and that's that CD5. And that makes this, all these B markers, and this leukemia with the CD5 is the diagnostic criteria for CLL. Okay, so your B cell markers and this CD5 will make it one of these CLL leukemias. Now, only 5% are T cells, and they're quite a bit more aggressive, okay? So when you see one, it's probably going to be this B cell. And when you have this T cell, then you have all the T cell markers there, okay? And again, more aggressive. Okay, I said it was the most common leukemia, median age. You know, it's probably closer to 65 than 55. Okay, it's an old person's leukemia. The male to female ratio is 2 to 1 to 4 to 1, so you can see the men win on this one.
Or lose.
Or lose. However you want to say that.
That's a good question. So you said that like it's less common in Asians and blacks, but most of the diseases we've talked about, the diseases are more severe with blacks.
They're more severe with blacks. They haven't commented on that, but I have to honestly say, well, Idaho Falls, Idaho only has three blacks, no city anyway, but I haven't seen it in blacks. What about down in Blackfoot? They have one down there, don't they? We don't have a huge population of blacks, so I don't know the answer to that. I haven't read that it is, okay? All right, so we believe that there are environmental factors. We believe there are genetic factors. Is there anything specific? No, there's not. You end up with this progressive accumulation of leukemic lymphocytes with no increase in the rate of proliferation. So, in essence, we have this accumulation that don't seem to die off, and then just a normal proliferation. Okay, so we end up with this burden of lymphocytes. There seems to be an inhibition of programmed cell death. So, an inhibition of normal apoptosis. And therefore, again, you get your accumulation from that mechanism. We believe that it is due to an overexpression of the oncogene BCL2. Normally interferes with apoptosis. Okay, so you can see that it creates a problem with apoptosis. So leukemic CLL cells are arrested in the G0 phase of cell cycle, and they sit there, and every once in a while will kick in and go in through. They're arrested at the late mature stages of B-cell differentiation. So if you think of your B-cell differentiation, you get to a point of about a virgin B-cell, prior to the time that heads on and starts producing some immunoglobulin. So it's arrested just before that stage, probably at a virgin B cell. And if the CLL cells were to lose this BCL protein, then you can see that the expression, then the cells die by apoptosis. So if you've got something inhibiting apoptosis and your cells are not dying, then that's where you get your accumulation. Okay, so it's BCL2. That's a gene. Okay, clinical symptoms. Do those look a little familiar? Fatigue and infections? Now, you don't necessarily see bleeding on these very often. And because the lymph nodes are involved, because of the lymphatic system and lymphs associated with that, you will see lymphadenopathy. You also can see some dermatologic type manifestations where you have infiltrations in these strange locations. And I've seen it more in the scalp, not much in the orbitus or the gums, but even big bulbs, things on your arms and on your back and various places. It's just a big, looks like a goose egg. Okay. And, you know, this easy bruising. I don't know if you've noticed old people's skin. It's called senile purpura. Huh? Yeah, I have one. Easy bruising. Shauna beat me up last night. Yeah, I wanted more for dinner and I wasn't going to get it. Okay, this is always there. You have an increased white count. It can range from 25,000 up to 500,000, 700,000. I think we have one upstairs at 700,000. It is an absolute lymphocytosis. These are leukemic lymphocytes. They may have this referred to as exaggerated nuclear chromatin clumping, and I'll show you a picture of that. Kind of looks like a turtle shell or a soccer ball, okay? And the size, you can have small ones, you can have medium-sized ones, or even large lymphocytes, okay? So here's your characteristic soccer ball or tortoise shell type of nuclear pattern. It looks hyperclumped, doesn't it? It looks too clumped for a normal lymphocyte population. The other thing that we will talk about is that these smudge cells are characteristically found in the CLL. These are actually fairly fragile cells. And sometimes there are so many smudge cells that you can't get a correct differential because so many cells are destroyed. So then we put a little bit of albumin with the blood, and then we can hold these cells together. But that is the second thing you'll look for in a CLL, this massive number of lymphocytes and smudge cells. Those two things, that's what you want to notice on your slides. And the bone marrow is basically obliterated the same way, all lymphocytes. And you will not be given a bone marrow for your slide test.
So you'll see the chunkiness with the lymphocytes?
No, not, you don't. In the bone marrow, it's always different, but out in the peripheral blood, typically there's just so many, they kind of hang together sometimes, but oftentimes they're very separated, so it's not necessarily a characteristic. Go ahead.
It's diagnostic, right, if you see those turtle shells?
Yes, uh-huh. You see those turtle shells, you see some smudge cells, you've got a high white count, they're all lymphocytes, you've got CLL. And, yes, they will take and send off the peripheral blood to confirm it with the B-cell markers and the CD5. But they don't ever have to do bone marrow on these people. They've got 500,000 cells, or they even have 30,000 cells in the peripheral blood. They can just send off the peripheral blood and get the answer. And, in essence, our pathologist will look at a picture like that last one, and it said they put out a thing that said lymphoproliferative disorder, probably CLL, suggests flow cytometry.
Who does the CD markers? Who does test for that?
A lot of places do. They do it in Boise and Idaho. They do it, of course, several places in Salt Lake now. And I imagine they do it at Provo. Do you know, Shauna?
Yeah.
They don't. They're too close to Salt Lake.
Okay.
It's an expensive test, and it's expensive to run. So if you've got a place to send it off, that's much wiser and cheaper. So, okay, the laboratory findings, you can have a minor population of what we call prolymphocytes. I'm not sure I noticed that in the last one here. I don't see any prolymphocytes in this one, but we'll show you what prolymphocytes look like. And you will want to know what prolymphocytes look like. Okay, so you have a minor population of what we call prolymphocytes, and they're a larger cell, and they have a prominent nucleoli. But they have to make up less than 10% for it to be a CLL. You have smudge cells, and I told you about that. Oftentimes you have a normocytic normochromic anemia. So in the CLLs, you have the same type of anemia as in the acute leukemias. And you can have 5 to 15% with an autoimmune hemolytic anemia. My grandfather actually died of this component of CLL. He was doing fine with the CLL, but he got an autoimmune hemolytic anemia and got to the point where we couldn't cross-match him at all, and ultimately died of his anemia. Okay, autoimmunity. That is something that's a bit of a problem because you do not have normal lymphocytes. Platelets are decreased as the disease progresses. So when the disease can stay stable for 20 years, I mean, you can die of old age before you die of CLL. But there are many people that have a more aggressive CLL, and as their disease becomes more, like their white count will continue to go up, their cells may change from lymphocytes to prolymphocytes or lymphoma-type cells or something like that, then the platelet count will start decreasing, okay? So as the disease gets worse, and as I mentioned earlier, the lymphocytes will obliterate the bone marrow too, and so it becomes very hypercellular. And for the peripheral, let's see, for the bone marrow, you see, this doesn't matter anymore, okay? Just wipe that out because you're going to send off a peripheral blood for flow cytometry now. Okay, they do have some cytogenetics that create some problems here. The trisomy 12 is the most common. It makes up about a third of the cases. The 13q abnormalities are only about a fourth and usually involve the 13th chromosome on the long arm. Okay, if you have the 14th chromosome involved, like 14q32, you have a worse prognosis. This is the site of the immunoglobulin heavy chain. And so needless to say, if you've done a translocation at that heavy chain, you're not going to have immunoglobulins functioning well for you at all. A common site for clonal abnormalities in B-cell malignancies. So, and we talked about the BCL2 activity and how it's increased and it inhibits apoptosis. Okay, prognostic factors. This is kind of important for you to know in real life, okay? If we talk about lymphocyte doubling time, we had a lady that worked at our place whose mother got chronic lymphocytic leukemia. She didn't have any chromosome abnormalities. She didn't have that high a white count. She was not that old a person. She was like in her late 50s. Her bone marrow pattern was just normal looking for a CLL, meaning it was just from side to side, and it wasn't in little groupings. And staging, as far as staging associated with how low is her hemoglobin, how low is her platelet count, things like that, everything was great. Except after the first year, her lymphocyte count was, say, one thing, but by the 12 months later, it had more than doubled. That was her one bad prognostic sign, and she died within a year and a half. So that was just really an abnormal situation. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of things we don't know about this disease yet, because it does go from a fairly innocuous type of disorder to fairly aggressive. And it doesn't seem to have an exact reason for doing it. So staging, you look at the total lymphocyte count. As I mentioned, anemia, thrombocytopenia, how much organomegaly you have, and the age. So as I mentioned earlier, organomegaly is usually associated with the lymph nodes. As we talk about prolymphocytes here in a few minutes, we'll notice the spleen starts getting involved. So the disease course, basically, you can almost guarantee survival for up to 4 years, 4 to 6 years. It can range clear up to 20 years. The thing about it is if you get CLL in the 50s, that's too young. You're not going to do as well. If you get it in the 70s, you know, there's a good chance you're not going to live till 90 anyway. You know, there's just not that many people up there. So 20 years is kind of not seen very often, okay? So 10 to 15% will live up to 10 years, less than 10%, less than 1 year. So you can see a wide variation in how long you're going to live without having a lot of good reasons for that. The blast crisis is uncommon. We're going to talk tomorrow about CML, which does go into blast crisis. CLL typically does not go into blast crisis, so meaning it's not going to end in an acute lymphoblastic leukemia. So it doesn't go from chronic lymphocytic leukemia to acute lymphoblastic. It doesn't happen, okay? That's not the way this terminates. And as I mentioned earlier, because the surveillance is cut back way with this, secondary malignancies will crop up, okay? Okay, so when a person comes in and, for example, my grandfather, he loved to dance. That was his favorite thing to do, was dance. And apparently he came into the ER, and my pathologist went down to see him for some reason. And he came up kind of laughing. He said, there's an old codger down in the ER, and he's there because he can't dance quite as good as he used to. We all kind of cracking up, and then I realize it's my grandfather. Anyway, that was his symptom. He just didn't have the stamina to dance like he used to be able to. And that typically is the symptom, or people, older people who are a little bit better about going in and getting their yearly checkups, will go in and they absolutely have no complaint and discover they have a 30,000 white count or something like that that will show up, and then we discover they have CLL and they have absolutely no symptoms. But usually fatigue or not being able to have the same stamina is one of the things they complain about a little bit. So, when you become symptomatic, if you become anemic, if you become thrombocytopenic, those are the times where we'll start doing therapy. So if you're asymptomatic, absolutely no treatment. Just check you out in a year, see how you're doing. So if you have to have chemotherapy, these are the ones that we usually use. You'll notice prednisone is one that we used with the acute leukemias, but chlorambucil and cyclophosphamide are two that we use for the chronic lymphocytic leukemias. Okay, now these are combined types of chemotherapy agents. You'll notice we in acute myeloblastic leukemia, we use DAT, so a combination of three. Typically, we like to use a combination of at least three or sometimes four different drugs. This is cyclophosphamide, this is vincristine, this is prednisone. I'm not sure what the H is here. But anyway, there's various combinations, and the drugs, the chemotherapy, I don't think anybody just gets one drug for chemotherapy anymore. They've discovered that combinations work so much better, okay? If you have a big spleen or huge lymph nodes, sometimes they use radiation for that. And if you have younger patients, and we're talking, you know, I've never seen a CLL in my life in the 30s or 40s. I've seen young 50s. So if you've got, and that's what it means by younger patients, if they're in their 50s, you're going to go ahead and try the stem cell transplants, okay, because these people are not going to do well. So the terminal event is going to, you can be pro-lymphocytic leukemia, so if you end up with like 7% pro-lymphocytes, and all of a sudden the count just keeps going up and up and up, and then you have less and less of the little lymphocytes. So that's called disease progression. Richter syndrome is a histiocytic lymphoma. I have a picture of Richter here in just a moment. Large cell lymphoma. There's the several different types of large cell lymphomas. Blast crisis, as I said, don't even put that in your memory bank. Usual cause of death is infection or disorders unrelated to CLL. So heart attacks, diabetes, all these various things that really are totally unassociated with CLL. But infection is a problem because you don't have the lymphocyte of your infection control, and you've got them wiping out the bone marrow, so you have difficulty making normal segs. So infection's huge. This is the Richter syndrome. Do you see how irregular all these cells are? So these are lymphoma cells, okay? And will you have to know that probably? Only need to know that you can terminate in a lymphoma, but will you ever have to look at that and tell me what it is? No. Okay. So if we just take a quick look at a case here, you can see that there's a little bit anemic, a little bit thrombocytopenic, platelet count, white count's up to 63,000, spleen weighs 1,150 grams. So we have huge splenomegaly in this case. We have a high white count. We've got a little anemia, a little thrombocytopenia. So this doesn't really follow a CLL, does it? Got too big a spleen, and we've got these two parameters that are a little bit low. So this is what we call a pro-lymphocytic, well, we call it chronic lymphocytic pro-lymphocytic leukemia, CLL/PLL. So if you have less than 11% pro-lymphocytes, you have CLL. If you've got a combination between 11 and 55% pro-lymphocytes, then you have CLL/PLL. And if you have greater than 55% pro-lymphocytes, you have PLL. This is the best to have, CLL, then CLL/PLL, and then PLL is a very aggressive disorder. Okay, that's why it turns out to matter. Okay, so if you've got CLL/PLL, you have a high white count, you have a count somewhere between 11 and 55% of them being pro-lymphocytes. Now you have splenomegaly. Remember, you had lymphadenopathy before. Now you have splenomegaly. And their response, the more pro-lymphocytes you have, the poorer your response to therapy. Okay. Yes.
So the CLL can progress to CLL/PLL.
Yes, it can be a progressive process to prolymphocytic leukemia. So, you remember we talked about a mature B cell being with a surface immunoglobulin? Okay, the virgin B cell, you don't have the surface immunoglobulin on there yet. So this is helpful in moving towards a PLL, is that this particular marker is stronger the closer it gets, because the pro-lymphocyte is after the virgin lymphocyte as far as the maturation scale goes, okay? So surface immunoglobulin is one of the last markers that comes on. CD5 may still be positive, but that's an indicator of the CLL cells, okay? So this will start diminishing the more pro-lymphocytes you have. Okay, so CD5 is associated with the CLL component. And CD23 is also associated with the CLL component. So when we drop these two off and pick up the FMC7 and the CD22, then we're headed way on towards this end here, okay? So those are how the CD markers work. So the CD5, CD23 are associated with the CLL, and the FMC7 and the CD22 more with the PLL, okay? So doing flow cytometry will help us know how this disease is progressing. Okay, so what's the course and prognosis of that one? I talked about more splenomegaly. That is helpful for us to diagnose this. We always look at how big the spleen is on this. The more that you see pro-lymphocytes, the less they're going to respond to therapy, and complete remissions or partial remissions, they're shorter. Sometimes they don't even exist, okay? So it's much more aggressive as we continue to go. So you can see they have shorter survival, less than 10%, less 1 year. Again, same thing, secondary malignancies, common blast crisis. Again, you're only going to go to the prolymphocytic stage before you die. Okay, we talked about the treatment. Okay, then there is prolymphocytic leukemia, and basically, in the early days, we first thought it was a variant of CLL. Now it's a disorder in and of itself. It's under the B-cell disorders. The predominant, most of them are B-cells. Some are still T-cells. This splenomegaly is massive. Huge, huge spleens. They have to come out. Sometimes skin infiltration. No lymphadenopathy. Interesting, isn't it? That you actually get rid of your lymphadenopathy. And again, it's an old person's disease, and the men win. Okay, greatly increased. Oftentimes you see in a CLL, yeah, it can go up to hundreds of thousands, but oftentimes you see CLL at less than 100,000, okay? But this one goes way up, and you can get up to 200,000, and it's really aggressive at that point. From C7... So by this time, two-thirds are CD5 negative. So you can see that you can still, even with greater than 55%, you can still have some normal-looking CLL cells. So it'll maintain the CD5, but the more you lose that, the worse it gets. Now, I notice Shauna has a little better picture than I do upstairs. So this is the predominant nucleoli. It's really hard to see, and there's one there. But if you see a whole bunch of cells with very prominent nucleoli that look like you just drew it on there, don't forget to think of prolymphocytic leukemia. This is a little bit better. You see the nucleoli here. But you see how clumped they are. You're not worried about these things being glass because they're clumped. Really clumped. And I don't think you necessarily will need to know about the translocations here. So what do we do to try to help these patients? We give them splenic irradiation, try to get the spleen out of there, do a splenectomy, If their white counts are just really, really high, and as you saw, those cells are a little bit bigger than the CLL cells, so you don't want too big of an accumulation of those cells, so then you try to take out some of the white cells by leukapheresis. You do the multi-agent chemotherapy. Fludarabine phosphate is a new drug that's out that seems to be a little bit helpful. And like I said, it's a much shorter survival with only 2 to 3 years. Okay, so that's CLL/PLL, and PLL. And as we mentioned, CLL is one of the most common leukemia in the Western world, so therefore you are going to need to know that one and understand that you will see that commonly, okay? Hairy cell, yes?
I have a quick question about that. So we were talking about the last leukemias with the M series, and you said like M4 was the most common in that?
In the acute leukemias.
Out of like all the types of leukemias, this one is
Right.
All the categories, most common.
Right. He's saying that I said the M4 was the most common in the acute leukemias, but this is the most common CLL out of all the leukemias. So acute and chronic, okay? Very, very common.
Out of like all the leukemias you've seen, what percentage do you think this would make out of it? Like over 50 or?
Okay, we were trying to decide. We see probably 10 acute leukemias a year, between 7 and 10. And we probably see a CLL once a month. It's probably about right. Okay? And that's a hospital, about 300 beds. So bigger facilities, probably lots more. Especially if it's a veteran's place where they're handling a lot older people, then you're going to have a higher percentage. Hairy cell leukemia. This is a fun leukemia because these hairy cells are so characteristic. And this one you will get, okay? You just will get this, right? Okay. Incidence, not very many of the leukemias, but you see it every once in a while. Huge male to female ratio, and the age is about 50 to 70, okay? Now, these hairy cells have this villous type of projection. I'll show that to you in just a minute. They have splenomegaly. The problem is these villous lymphocytes that have these hairy projections on the cytoplasm get hung up in the spleen. Then you have a condition called hypersplenism. You know what that is? The red cells can't get through, the white cells can't get through, the platelets can't get through, and the spleen just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so you look pancytopenic because everything's getting hung up in the spleen. So the spleen is massive in 80 to 90% of the cases. You even have hepatomegaly. Lymphadenopathy is not very common. And this is the critical area of diagnosis, is a pancytopenia. If you come in with a huge spleen and you have pancytopenia and you're up in the upper age group, we have a tendency to look for hairy cells just to make sure we don't miss them. So, commonly anemic, white cell count is usually decreased. There are some leukemic, even though we call it leukemia, some have higher white counts and they act more leukemic, meaning they're more aggressive. Platelets are usually decreased, as I said, pancytopenia. But we're not talking about an ITP. We're talking about, which is down around 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. This is closer to like 75,000 to 110,000, something like that. So you're not seriously thrombocytopenic. So we try to do a bone marrow on these patients, and because these lymphocytes that have the villous cytoplasm hook up together, and they become very, very, they're not sticky, they actually hook up together. And you can't pull them out. And we also have a little increased fibrosis from these types of cells. So this is the second case. Have we talked about another case? Yes, M7. The second case that we can have a dry tap, okay, and the fibrosis. So we have to have a biopsy in order to diagnose this. Okay. This lymphoid cell has hairy pale blue cytoplasmic projections, As Christine talked to you some this morning, they're very stiff. They will actually push the red cell away. They will not flow around the red cell. They just push them away and will actually move them. And the nucleus is usually round or oval, but can also have an hourglass shape. Okay? So we used to think that there were lymphoid hairy cells and monocytic hairy cells because of that hourglass shape. But when we finally were able to do flow cytometry on them, we discovered they're all B cells, okay? Nucleoli, typically absent. This is chronic leukemia. This is a more mature cell. The chromatin, it's kind of strands instead of clumps. I think Christine used the term, and I'd never heard this, of kind of a pile of worms all together. It's that kind of clumping pattern. What else did you say? I would say, what did she say?
Shauna digs her own, but she doesn't.
She digs her own. So she picks them up one at a time. They kind of look like fine strand chromatin pattern. But if worms work for you, fine. Okay. Cytoplasm is usually voluminous. You have a lot of cytoplasm, at least as much as you plan to see on a monocyte type thing. But the outline of the cytoplasm is very irregular, okay? Now, you'll see that we have B-cell markers here, but this is the one that helps us know we have hairy cells, so CD25. And all of them are the B-cell lineage. Okay, so here's your hairy cell. It just is an irregular villus type of projections here. This one's not quite as villus here. And you see this chromatin pattern. It definitely doesn't look exactly like a lymphocyte nucleus, does it? It has just it's a little bit more open, but not necessarily with euchromatin and heterochromatin there. So, anybody see worms there? Okay, and these are hairy cells, too. You see? So make sure you look at a few.
They look a little bit like some plasma cells. Like pretty irregular plasma cells.
Well, plasma cells typically do not have this frayed up. Okay, I take that back. If, in fact, you're looking at a multiple myeloma, that would be in the bone marrow. And then you sometimes can see some very irregular outlines on malignant plasma cells, okay? And then you have sheets of plasma cells to look at. So if this is what you're seeing, then you wouldn't see anything like this in the peripheral blood.
This is
peripheral blood. If you just look at the red cells, you should be able to know whether you got peripheral blood or bone marrow, okay? Because you can't get this much uniformity in the bone marrow as far as red cells, okay? So we have a few cases upstairs for you to look at. Make sure you get used to seeing what these hairy cells look like. Now, some of the white cell counts are fairly low, so you have to look a while for your hairy cells. So you might try going back and getting a different case, okay? Okay, if you had a lymphocyte with this much cytoplasm, you'd have a reactive lymphocyte. Okay? And a reactive lymphocyte flows around the red cells. And the cytoplasm is enclosed. Otherwise, you have a broken cell. Okay? But a broken cell always changes the nucleus. Remember, the nucleus starts changing as soon as the cell's broken. This nucleus doesn't change. This nucleus is still in contact. So as soon as the cell breaks, usually you can tell it's broken, especially with the nucleus. It changes dramatically. And the only other cell that has this much cytoplasm is a reactive lymphocyte. And as you look at those reactive lymphocytes, they don't resemble this at all.
How come we're going along and we ran across one of them? that noteworthy, or should we keep looking and make sure that it's...
I always try to keep looking to make sure, but I have gotten a bone marrow off of one cell before with a pathologist. So one hairy cell is clinically important, but you always like to confirm it if you can. Okay. One of the things, since you guys have done buffy coats, one of the characteristics of these things, if you do a buffy coat to try and see more cells, which if you're pancytopenic, this is something we've done before, that you can actually take that whole buffy coat layer off as one lump because there's enough hairy cells that's holding the whole thing together. And it's kind of a real clue that that's what you do have is hairy cells. So, okay, this you'll need to know. TRAP, tartrate-resistant acid phosphatase positive.
Two Copeland jars.
Okay, and you're putting acid phosphatase in both of them. But in this one, you're adding tartrate. So the same concept as the fluoride inhibition one, remember? Okay, almost all hematologic cells have some acid phosphatase in them, okay? So that's why it's not a hugely useful stain, is because so many cells have it. But in this particular case, we're using this on a hairy cell. We put the blood in here, and we're going to see acid phosphatase positivity, and we put it in here, and the hairy cells are going to remain positive, and the other lymphocytes will go negative. Boy, you guys can't see it. I can't see it. See, I can't even see it. Okay, so the hairy cells will remain positive, so they're resistant to the tartrate inhibition. Okay, but the lymphocytes will go negative. Okay, so do you understand that one?
Yeah.
Okay, so those hairy cells are going to remain positive, and that you will need to know. And it just explains that it's due to this isoenzyme 5, but that's not critical for you to know.
How are you able to identify that? Can you tell just by looking
at it? Uh-huh. You'll be able to just look at it and see. Okay, so this is a lymphocyte that's gone negative, and these are the hairy cells that have maintained their positivity. Okay, everybody good with that? So these are just regular lymphocytes, and then these are the hairy cells. Okay? And that is the color you would expect to see, is that red color. And why did I show you this? I don't know. Not a characteristic of hairy cells, okay? Don't know why it's here. Makes you worry, doesn't it? Okay, explain it one more time. Okay. So, with the tartrate, we've added tartrate inhibition to this stain, okay? It's already on it. The lymphocytes that will normally be positive without the tartrate will now become inhibited by the tartrate and won't stain. But the hairy cells can still maintain the staining characteristic because of this isoenzyme 5, okay?
See that to the left is the definite.
To the left is what?
Okay, you know, there's two breaking points.
Uh-huh. Oh, it does have positivity. Okay, yeah. That one is a hairy cell too. Good point.
Good.
Inside, I couldn't tell. I don't see this one. Not even sure what that one is. If we had a nice lymphocyte instead of a nucleated red cell here, it would be negative. It would not have any of those red granules in. Okay. So that's how the TRAP stain works, and it's referred to as the TRAP stain: tartrate resistant acid phosphatase. And now let's go look at this again. Seems to be it. There's nothing else.
Oh.
My favorite. Yes.
Well, this is a peripheral smear of a hairy cell because it's pancytopenic. So it's got too many platelets. Anyway, skip that one. These are hairy cells again. See the tartrate resistant ones? Those are hairy cells. Can we see a lymphocyte? See, it's pretty granular around here. This actually is a bone marrow that we did this stain on.
Those red dots are positive, right?
So these are positive. These are the most obvious positive ones. These over here, can't tell for sure. These, huh?
Are there any
negative? You guys see negative back there? No, usually you just see some that have. If you see, if she puts on a stain and you see this red positivity, you know it's a hairy cell, okay? Yes.
Are there going to be trap stains?
Do we have any trap stains up there? I don't think we do, do we? So obviously you won't have to look at them on a slide, huh? Any other questions? Did I miss? Okay. All right, so how do we treat this hairy cell leukemia? That was bad. Okay, we use interferon, and we can use splenectomy. Interferon and splenectomy, that's what you need to remember.
Does interferon trigger apoptosis?
The exact mechanism of interferon, I'm not sure what it is, but I do know it's used in this particular. And then splenectomy, I want you to remember that, okay? Those two in particular. Okay, the course, it's either very aggressive or very not aggressive, okay? Major cause of death is infection. Okay, I apologize, I must have gone to sleep. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we'll have to go ahead and go. I thought it was about 12:30.